What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 2 of the Retired Mosher Podcast. I am your host, James Brizuela, otherwise known as the Retired Mosher. I want to start this episode off by giving everybody that has shown me love from my first episode a huge shout out. Seriously, everybody, thank you guys so much. I honestly didn't really think that I would get this much listens and messages and everything under the sun. I've had plenty of people follow me on my Instagram page, so thank you for that. I have a lot of listens on my first episode, and I got a lot of really positive feedback, obviously, from friends and family. And honestly, I couldn't be happier about it. Thank you guys so much. The first episode, as everybody heard, is deeply personal, so I really appreciate the fact that people found some sort of solace with it. People reached out and it connected them to me and to their lost ones and everything. Just honestly, I didn't really expect to record something like that. I just felt like I had to get it out. I felt like it was a very cathartic experience for me. I feel like I was holding on to a lot of that, and it was my chance to kind of let some of it go. Not let it go, but to let it go out into the universe, if you will, to speak on it, to talk about it. I've kept a lot of that private, and honestly, I felt comfortable in sharing with people a little bit about my personal life in that regard. So seriously, thank you everybody that reached out. And to everybody that found a connection because of that or felt some sort of levity because of it, I'm glad that happened. That's kind of what the point of this is. That's what the point of podcasts are, right? It's a bunch of people that you don't know that you might be a fan of, or people that you may not even be a fan of yet. But you listen to their podcast because you want to feel some sort of deeper human connection. And that's why we record podcasts. We record podcasts because we're trying to connect with the world in a digital format. And I'm glad that that happened, even in whatever small way that it did happen for people. I'm truly happy. I cannot be happier about my first episode. And also, people have been reaching out asking me where episode 2 is. So for those people, I also say thank you. That's really, you know, you guys are gassing me up, as the kids would say, and I really appreciate it. I'm sorry that I've been delayed with episode 2. This past week has been kind of crazy for me. An update on my last episode, the memorial for my friend Monica, happened, so I wasn't exactly in the right state of mind to kind of want to record and or to do much of anything else. It was tough to deal with, but you know, we're moving on. She would want me to hang my head high, and I'm doing so now, and I know she would do the same for me. So here we are, episode 2 of the Retired Mosher Podcast. And this episode, I really wanted to kind of explain what this podcast is all about. That's kind of what I wanted to do initially. The whole plan initially was I was going to record a teaser and kind of give a snapshot of this first season of this podcast and give a kind of general overlay of what I'm going to be doing. But I didn't really get to do that because I decided to pivot and produce my first episode, which many of you heard already. And that's just what happened. I didn't really plan for it, but I rolled with it. And that's kind of what I'm going to be doing now. I'm just rolling with episode after episode of me just talking to the world, talking to anybody who's listening, who wants to listen. So I decided to call the Retired Mosher Podcast the Retired Mosher Podcast for one simple reason. It's that I am an aging metalhead and music fan that used to mosh. I love the mosh pit. I lived for the mosh pit. I was a rowdy showgoer, but I'm not so much that anymore. And so this is kind of a homage to how I grew up. And I kind of want to take everybody back in time to kind of break down my showgoing career, if you will, my emergence as a metalhead, and why it makes sense for myself to be known as the Retired Mosher. So just like in the first episode where I took everybody back in time, may not be that far back in time as I only went to 2020, but this episode, I'm going to take you way back. I'm talking back. Not even when I was a little kid and I was cognizant of everything around me. I'm talking about my first memory as a baby. Now, I know that this is a kind of rarity for people. I know some people have shared with me before that they do remember their first memory as a baby, but I know that it's not necessarily something that we can take fully to heart, because I could have created this memory in my head because it's a nice memory, and this memory has just lived on with me since I was a small child. But I know that maybe I made it up, possibly, but then again, there are studies where people do remember their first memories as a baby. So I'm going to take you way, way, way back to my very first memory as a baby. And it happens to be the same exact time where I fell in love with music. I must have been maybe, so this is maybe 1987, maybe 1988. Yes, people, that is how old I am. Again, that's why I'm the retired mosher. So I was a small, small baby, maybe 1 year old, maybe 2 years old. Don't quite remember, but this is the vision that I have. So I'm in our old either apartment or I'm in my grandmother's house. I can't really remember exactly which it was, but I remember the overlay and it kind of reminds me of my grandma's house. But then again, we could have had a same house and or apartment that was exactly like my grandma's house. So I digress. Now, what I remember from this memory is being a small baby and laying on my stomach on the floor on a blanket. I'm looking up and I see this old 1980s couch with terrible patterns. You know how they are. If you've seen them, you know what I'm talking about. And if not, kids, just Google 1980s couch and you'll know exactly what I mean. They were these like kind of like magnanimous beasts of couch that had these ridiculous flower patterns on it. They didn't look good. They just looked corny. But back in the day, that was the style. So I'm laying down. I'm on my belly on a blanket and I'm staring up at the couch. To the right of me is this giant 1980s stereo setup. Again, people, if you Google 1980s stereo setup, you'll know what I'm talking about. These monstrous things were a big central unit that not only had an A-track player on it, it had a cassette player, it had a full equalizer, but it also had a record player at the top. To the right and to the left of this central unit were about 3.5, maybe 4 foot speakers. They were huge. This thing was a monster. And this is how we used to listen to the radio. This is how we used to listen to records. This is how we used to listen to cassettes. In my house, at every single moment, there was always music on. I don't believe that we watched much TV back then, so to speak. I know we did, but I think we were more into music. So laying on my belly on the blanket, couch in front of me, to the right is that big stereo, and dancing around the living room going into the kitchen is my mother, and we're listening to Bob Marley. I want to say it was probably Three Little Birds, but I don't really recall the song. But she's dancing around and she's singing and she's kind of like interacting with me. You know, I'm laying down, I'm pretty sure I'm probably smiling or laughing. Little baby, big ass head. Yeah, I do have a big ass head. I grew into it eventually, but back then I was just basically a toothpick on an orange, or an orange on a toothpick rather, excuse me. Either way, I'm there, my mom's dancing around, it's Bob Marley, and that's my very first memory as a baby. It's a memory that I've held on for many years. So I want to say that it's not untrue, and even regardless if it's something that I made up, it's a very nice memory. So guess what? I'm keeping it. In my house in the 80s and the early 90s, we listened to a lot of Bob Marley. Bob Marley was a shit. Bob Marley was a shit before the 1980s, but he was, you know, huge in the 1980s. And I learned to love his music early on, like very early on, clearly. And yeah, that was my very first memory of music. And my mom always had music playing, whether it was Bob Marley or many of the 80s greats that I'm a huge fan of, that I've listened to my entire life, Depeche Mode, The Cure, you know, things of that sort. We always had music on. I was always listening to music at an early age. But I wasn't exactly obsessed with music then. I was a small child, and as a small child, you're kind of more interested in other things. So this is obviously, you know, a few years after I'm a baby. I'm a small child running around, big head still. But I loved music. I loved listening to it with my mom, dancing around. That was my thing. So before I even listened to rock music, I was not really into rock as much as I was into gangster rap and hip hop. Yep, you heard that right. I had an older brother who was 5 years older than me. And naturally, when you have an older brother, you have an older sibling, you people know what I'm talking about. An older sister, an older brother, whatever it is, like you want to emulate. Everything that they do, you want to do the same things. Even though they find you annoying and they try to get rid of you every chance they get, you just want to be around them. You want to find some way to capture their aura, if you will. And so my brother, from an early age, he was a bit of a thug, and naturally he liked hip hop. And I'm not saying that people that listen to hip hop are thugs and that's mutually exclusive. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying he liked hip hop music, and especially gangster rap. He loved it, and he introduced it to me at a very early age. And I'm talking like I was maybe 4 or 5, maybe 6 years old, and I was already to things like Tupac and KRS-One and Biggie and Bone Thugs and Wu-Tang and everything you can think of. And that's what I listened to. I listened to hip-hop exclusively for, I would say, the first 5 years of my music obsession. So funny enough, we lived in an apartment complex in Riverside, California, that was really rough to live in around them. I will give you the name of those apartments. The name of those apartments were the Rat Traps. People have come to know these apartments. I've actually had friends that lived there past when I did. But in the early 90s, when we moved into this apartment complex, it was rough. There's a little playground, and I'm like 8, 7 or 8, maybe 9-ish around there. And I'm in the park with the sand playing with my action figures and whatnot. And I see a drug bust go down. Literally full SWAT team. They get the battering ram. They knock the door down. They go in. They arrest the guys. I saw this, and I'm staring them, watching this go down on a jungle gym, in a playground, in an apartment complex. And that was not the first, that was not the last time that I saw a drug bust go down. There was other things that were pretty rough about this apartment complex in the early 90s. They had a reputation, which was why they were called the Rat Traps. As you can tell from the name, they were pretty rough. So we moved in there, and I was already deeply into my hip hop obsession. You know, again, trying to emulate my older brother. And I also grew up as a big time Star Wars fan, which why people know me to be a huge Star Wars fan now. I watched the original trilogy when I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I became obsessed with it. So Star Wars, hip hop, little kid, giant head. That's what's going on. That's where I'm at. So moved into the Rat Traps, and my brother being older, and like I said, being a bit of a thug, ended up befriending many of the thugs that lived in the apartment complex. He started hanging out with them and doing, who knows, probably up to no good. Don't exactly know when. He was a teenager. I was a little big-headed kid. So somebody had gifted me, I don't recall if it was my mom or whoever it was, they gifted me an R2-D2 cassette player. This thing was super badass. It was literally the droid, and then you press a button and his chest opens, and that's where you put the cassette, and had speakers built in, and it played music. It was awesome. I wish I would have kept it, because I'm sure that thing would be worth a lot of money now. And it's just a cool relic, right? Yeah, relic. I'm talking about relics in the 1990s, but hey, it was 30 years ago, so there you go. Anyway, so I have this cassette player, and I have a cassette. That cassette happens to be one of my all-time favorite albums, which is Notorious B.I.G. Ready to Die. Ready to Die came out in 1994, and by the time the album came out, naturally, we were already listening to it. At this point, I was 7 years old, so by the time I was listening to it on my cassette player, I was maybe 8 years old. Again, maybe 9. Don't really recall exactly when, but it was around those years. Yeah, there I am, big-headed kid, R2-D2 cassette player, Notorious B.I.G. Ready to Die, and I am walking around my apartment complex listening to it. So, you can imagine this little brown kid in a really rough apartment complex walking around bumping the Notorious B.I.G. But because of my brother and his stature with these people, they knew me. They knew me as his little brother, and I was cool with everybody. So I wasn't necessarily in any danger walking around, but I would literally just spend hours walking laps around this apartment complex. When he turned in, it was basically like a U-shape. So you can turn in and turn right and go all the way out, or you could move a little bit up like a block or two and then go in right and then come back out. Big U-shape, big apartment complex, apartments all on the U on the outside and then in the middle as well. So it was fun for me to just walk around. I mean, obviously I had to stay in the general vicinity or my mom would have killed me, but I still like to walk around. So I'm bumping B.I.G. and I see one of the guys that's in the local gang, if you will, in this apartment complex. And he sees me and he's like, hey, little homie, what are you bumping? And then I just walk up and I show him and he's like, all right. And he's like, stay up. And I just keep going. Keep walking. Mind my own business. So, yeah, when I was around that age, I loved hip hop. That's all I loved. I didn't really listen to rock music. Naturally, my mom was very much a 80s and rock person. She wasn't so much a hip-hop person. And she liked every corny 90s band you can think of, every 90s grunge band you can think of, but I wasn't as obsessed with them. I would much rather listen to hip hop back then, and that's what I did. I just listened to hip hop. So, but yeah, you can imagine every single corny 90s artist you can think of. Seal, Cranberries, Tony Braxton, dude, Unbreak My Heart. Oh my God, forget about it. That song was on loop at my house. And Alanis Morissette. Holy shit, people. Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill. When that album came out, forget about it. It came out in 1995. And I'm telling you right now, hell hath no fury like a white woman scorned. And Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill came out. My mom was bumping that album from day in and day out constantly. I can recite that entire album. That is how much we listen to it. And it's a great album, so I'm not knocking it. But what I'm saying is, we got burned out on it. So again, I was not naturally wanting to listen to this music, maybe because it was played so much in my house, but mostly because I was already like a hip hop kid at this point, trying to emulate my older brother, and that's what I loved. In fact, the only reason why I started listening to rock music is because Ice Cube made it onto a rock album. 1997, Korn's Follow the Leader featured Ice Cube on what, 3 or 4 tracks, maybe 5 tracks? I don't really remember, but all I know is my brother's friend gave him that CD and was like, you gotta check this out. Ice Cube is with this band. The moment that I heard Follow the Leader, my entire world changed. I could not believe that music like this existed. It was angry. It was violent. It was provocative, if you will. Shout out to Will Ferrell. Nobody knows what it means, but it's provocative. So that was me. I was a little kid and I heard Follow the Leader. I hear Ice Cube and I hear rock, and I was so obsessed with it. I think that was kind of like the perfect marriage. Back in the day, the new metal scene, the whole rap rock thing, I got it. Like it started to get to me. And after that moment, I obviously kept that CD. My brother's friend never came back for it, and I was like, well, it's mine. So that was on loop for me for months on end. I was like, this album is it. And then I started listening to Korn more. I went to Warehouse Music and I bought all their CDs, and I loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. And that's what started me on getting more into rock music. By that time, 97, I was 10 years old. So I started taking more of an active obsession with rock music. And then my father started noticing. I was listening to K-Rock, which was the legendary local LA radio station, and also X1039, which was even more local to the Inland Empire. K-Rock was more LA based, and then X1039 was like for Riverside and the IE. So I was fully into rock music at this point. But again, I really preferred the whole rap rock bands. Like that's kind of like 311 I liked a lot. There was a local band that was named Zebrahead that me and my sister and my father got really into. So that was my very first show. That was my very first rock show experience. We went to, I believe, it was either K-Rock or X1039, probably K-Rock, threw a show at the Santa Anita Racetrack. They used to do this all the time and it was a lot of fun. They would always be like free shows. You would go and just show up and just watch a band play. And Zebrahead was that band. At this point, we had been listening to them on the radio for a long time. I want to say we even got their demo tape at the Warped Tour, possibly. So we ended up getting their cassette and their CD, their debut album. And we were obsessed. We love this band. So my father took me to my first show when I was 11 years old in 1998. And it was to see Zebrahead at the Santa Anita Racetrack. It was the coolest thing for me. I was in the front. I'm skinny. I'm scrawny. I'm tiny. Big ass head, like I said, a bunch of times. And I'm right there in the front watching the band. And this is also the first time I'm experiencing stage divers and crowd surfers and the mosh pit. And honestly, it frightened me. I mean, I was super small when I was a kid. I didn't hit my growth spurt until I was like maybe 18 or 19 years old. And so I see these giant people just getting thrown around, and it scared the shit out of me. Like, really, it scared the hell out of me. I was like, okay, like, I can't hang with this. So I was always scared. I didn't really want to get in the mosh pit or be even around crowd surfers. I wanted to be in the front. But obviously, as you get older, you realize the front is kind of the most dangerous place to be. But anyway, so we go there and we're watching Zebrahead play. And again, it was a life-changing experience for me. In the front, seeing Zebrahead, we're there having a blast. It changed my life. That's what started me on my live music obsession as well. So I go from hip-hop head to liking rock music, getting really, really obsessed with it. And then there I am at a show. I experience what it's like to see live music for the first time in my life. And I love it. From that point on, that's all I wanted to do with my time. Every show that I could go to, I wanted to go to. The Warped Tour in the late 90s and the early 2000s. Like, we were there. We were at every K-Rock show you can think of. The Weenie Roast, Almost Acoustic Christmas. Like, all of those shows. Again, we would go to Warehouse and we would wait in line to try to get tickets. And we would try to go to every show. So I believe it was my second show seeing Zebrahead, and they were playing with Static X, believe it or not. And this might have been 1999, and I want to say 1999, and or 1998 maybe. And this might have been a little bit before Wisconsin Death Trip came out, which is the first Static X album. It came out in 1999, and my first experience with it was seeing them play these songs. And so once again, I'm in the front of the show, and it's at the Glass House, I believe, and I'm staring at Wayne Static's giant hair, like his huge hair, and I couldn't stop staring at it. And then unbeknownst to me, a big fat dude falls down on me and kicks me in the face, and I'm done. I'm crying. I know I'm still a little kid, crying my head off. You know, the people at the event, like, I go back to where the concessions are being sold, and the lady tries to give me a candy bar, and I'm like, no, I don't want it. She's trying to cheer me up. I'm crying my head off, trying to calm down, and I ended up getting a black eye from that kick. Funny enough, I had to go to school as well, you know, elementary school, I believe. I was in sixth grade at this point, and I kept getting looks, and I actually had to answer questions like, did your parents do this? And I was like, no, I mean, I'm not getting beat at home. I got kicked in the face by a crowd surfer. But again, it scared me. I mean, I'm a kid, and I get kicked in the face by this guy, and I just, the mosh pit and crowd surfing for me were just, it was chaotic. But naturally, when you see something so chaotic, you kind of want to know what it's about. You kind of want to be in the middle of it, so to speak. So after my second show, I just, we're going to shows constantly. Like, that's what we do on the weekends. We're just at shows. And my rock obsession started to turn into more heavy stuff. Like, you know, obviously, again, I was listening to Korn, but I wanted to listen to heavier stuff. At that point, I mean, I knew who Slayer was. I knew who Pantera was. And I was listening to them, kind of, but I wasn't fully about them just yet. But I did like them. I felt like it was, that was like my earliest entry into, like, metal. Granted, Pantera and Slayer aren't, like, the craziest of metals, Slayer more than Pantera. That was my first inkling of the genre. I started to kind of like slowly eke my way into listening to bands like this. And I was about 12 years old, maybe 13 years old. And once again, my music fanaticism would change. On top of my brother's friends giving him, you know, albums like Korn Follow the Leader album and stuff like that, he also brought over a cassette tape of Wu-Tang Enter the 36 Chambers, and he gave it to me, and I was like, yeah, you know, it was one of my favorite albums, and I was super stoked about it. But then he also gave me a Dead Kennedys, I believe it was Holiday in Cambodia, and holy shit, I was completely flabbergasted once again by punk music. I was like, whoa, what is this? It was angsty and crazy, and it sounded violent, and it sounded like, you know, they were trying to rally everybody. And I instantly became obsessed with that as well. Listening to my first Dead Kennedys tape kind of like blew everything open. I was like, man, I got to get more of this music. I need to listen to more. So then I started like listening to like the Ramones, and I started listening to, you know, the classics, the Sex Pistols, stuff like that. That was my entrance into the punk genre. So by the time I'm 12 or 13, leading into 13, I believe I'm leaving junior high and I'm just about to get into high school. I started just going crazy on punk bands. We were listening to everything. Like, Narcoleptic Youth became a huge band for me back then. In fact, I ended up getting a vest and they were my back patch for my entire high school experience. And then that's when the showcase happened. We discovered the showcase, and for people that don't know, the showcase is a legendary, or was a legendary, venue in Corona, California, where every band you can possibly think of played there. No Doubt played there. AFI played there. Amon Amarth played there. The Murder Dolls played there. Like, every band that you can think of that was coming up in that time played at the Showcase Theater. Nile, like, man, the list goes on and on and on. So we would always get the paper calendar handouts, but naturally I just wanted to go see all the punk music. So I saw Narcoleptic Youth, I don't even know how many times at Showcase. I want to say it's probably in the 20s, maybe even more. I don't even know. I spent 4 years of high school going to the Showcase. You know, The Voids, Litmus Green, The Addicts I saw a bunch of times there, Subhumans I saw there, man, Cheap Sex, like so many punk bands. Like by the time I hit high school, I was fully thrust into the punk scene. And it was around that time, 13 or 14, when I actually experienced my first moshing experience. I was so curious about it, even though it scared the shit out of me. Like I was so curious about it that I couldn't stop myself from wanting to experience it. So I was around 13 years old. And again, we were listening to a lot of K-rock bands and we were going to a lot of K-rock shows. And it was at that point I experienced my first moshing experience. So I believe it was June 19, 1999. It was K-rock Weenie Roast, the lineup here: Red Hot Chili Peppers, Metallica, Limp Bizkit, Blink-182, Sugar Ray, Live, Kid Rock, Smash Mouth, Orgy, and Pennywise. And on the side stage, it was Moby, Low Fidelity, All Stars, The Living End, Freestylers, and Lit. I want to say the first moshing experience that I... The band that I experienced my first moshing to was Lit. I remember being on the side stage, and I was, again, 13 years old, around there, tiny, and maybe 12. I can't remember, to be honest with you. Anyway, that's not the point. So, Lit is on, and I work my way to the front like I usually did. And back then, it was a lot easier for me to do so because I was a tiny, scrawny kid. So, most of the time, people kind of moved out of my way, and I didn't really take up much space. So, I'm near the front, and I get right up to the edge of the mosh pit. And I'm watching all these like big, drunk, hulking guys running into each other. And again, it scared me, but I also wanted to experience what it was like. I needed to like check it off my list. So I gathered up all my courage and I said, screw it. And I jumped into the mosh pit and I kept going around and around. I'm little and I'm just running into these guys and bouncing off them like a pinball. And I fall. And obviously when you're in a circle pit, for anybody that's experienced it, usually people just come and pick you up. And that's what they're supposed to do. And that's what happened. You know, I didn't really understand that at that point. But I was just going around doing my thing and I get hit hard. And I just, the side stage was on asphalt. I just fall. When you're younger though, it doesn't really matter. If you fall, you can get right back up and you're fine. You heal so quickly. It doesn't really happen like that now. But so I fall, I get picked up and everybody's patting me on the back and cheering me on. It was a great moment. And then even when the song ends, the lead singer from Lit points me out. He's like, yeah, look at the little man in the pit. So instant gratification. I feel like a rock star. I love it. Like at that point, I was like, well, this is me now. So I go from listening to hip hop, go to listening to rock, experience my first mosh pit. And now I'm into punk music. At this point, when I'm at Showcase, I am a monster in the pit. Not size, not pushing people around, but I will not stop getting in the mosh pit for every single show that I go to from that point on. And I'm talking the full lineup from the opening band all the way to the end of the closer. I'm in the mosh pit the whole time, dripping sweat, just going absolutely crazy. In fact, at the Showcase Theater, for those who haven't been there, when you walk in, there's a little ramp to the right, and then the main stage, the stage is right there in the center. To the immediate right of that is a staircase where you go up where they sold merch for all the bands. There are many people who have jumped off that balcony into the crowd, and I am one of them. I can't remember. I believe it was for Evergreen Terrace, and I know it was for a hardcore band. And again, back then, I'm little, so it doesn't really matter. I point people out, make sure they know that I'm jumping, and I jump. So that's the kind of gusto that I had with moshing. I'm 14 years old, 15 years old, and I can't stop. One of the bands that I mentioned that was at that K-Rock Weenie Roast was The Living End, which was a really cool punk band from the UK. They had a really great song on the radio that we loved, and we ended up going to see them at Chain Reaction. And same thing, the entire time I was in the mosh pit, I remember leaving. At this point, I had my punk vest and whatnot. I remember leaving the show and I'm just covered in sweat. Like this was what I was all about. I couldn't get enough of it. So throughout my teenage years, being in high school, I could not get enough of the pit. It wasn't just moshing either. I was crowd surfing at that point. I was stage diving. Like anytime that I saw Narcoleptic Youth at the Showcase, I was leaping off that stage like a madman, doing front flips, doing everything I can, just going absolutely crazy. I loved it. I lived for it. Moshing and show going. That became my life at an early age, and that's all I wanted to do. Again, that's it. That's like for as long as I can remember, I was going to shows. I couldn't get enough of them. So it was in high school when I started getting introduced to extreme metal. initially did not like it. I had my good buddies, Sayel, Rob, other Rob, and Danny. By the time I met them, they were already listening to metal. I mean, they listened to Slipknot. We were in a Slipknot cover band. That was my very first band, was a Slipknot cover band. I was a singer. But they started listening to way heavier stuff like Rammstein and Marilyn Manson. And maybe Marilyn Manson is not the heaviest example, but that's what they were listening to. That's what they introduced me to then. I was Mr. Punk Rock, but then I started slowly getting more into extreme metal. I remember the very first metal album that I heard, extreme metal album, was Cradle of Filth, Cruelty, and the Beast. And again, it really sucked me in. I was like, whoa, what is this music? Like, it was chaotic and heavy, but it was also beautiful, and it reminded me of classical music. And I also grew up a big classical fan. Still am. Took many classical music courses at RCC, and that's how I ended up with the associates that I have. Anyway, once again, I digress. So, Cradle of Filth was the first extreme band that I listened to, and I couldn't get enough of them. Really, really loved them. And it was about sophomore year, I had this giant red mohawk. It was 12 inches. I would wake up in the morning. I would put Knox gelatin in it. I would iron it. I would have my sister help me. I would do Liberty Spikes, or I would fan it out. So that's not really relevant, so to speak. I mean, it is and it isn't. Just a little fun fact, if you will. So I'm 15 years old, and there was a channel that we had on cable called Much Music. Much Music ended up turning into Fuse. But before it became Fuse, it was Much Music. Now, Much Music was very much like MTV2 when it first came out. All they did all day long was play music videos, and I couldn't get enough of it. Again, at this point, I'm fully thrust into the music scene. Can't get enough of it. But on Much Music, they played music videos all day, and I loved it because I liked a lot of 90s music at that point. You know, all the grunge bands, all of the one-hit wonders, I loved all of it. And so they would play rock music all the time. There was really no hip-hop on it, at least from what I understood. So we would get home from school, and we would just put that on, and we would just sit there and watch music videos all day long. This is when I discovered a metal half-hour special called Uranium. Uranium was the first time that I actually got to listen to some really heavy stuff, because they played music videos on nothing but metal bands, but like really heavy stuff. I mean, granted, there was some popular stuff, or, you know, some metalcore, if you will. Like Killswitch Engage was a big artist. They got interviewed on that show a lot. They were on there a lot. I saw a lot of their music videos, but I remember the first music video that really got to me was from In Flames, and it was Cloud Connected. In Flames is, to this day, my favorite metal band, and it's because of this. I was 15 years old, sophomore in high school, and I hear Cloud Connected, and holy shit, what a song. Cloud Connected blew my mind open, and again, it introduced me to a whole new wealth of bands, like the whole melodic, heavy music. I didn't really listen to up to that point, but that's what started me on it. So once I started listening to In Flames, I kind of wanted to get more heavy, and initially, Rob had showed me Nile. He showed me Nile when we were like around that age, and at first I hated it. I could not listen to that music. I thought it was noise. I was like, oh my god, what is this stuff? I wanted nothing to do with it. I hated death metal when I first heard it, funny enough. So we had a record store called Sounds Like that I used to go to all the time, and that's where I used to buy my music. And I remember perusing the metal section, trying to see what I could find, and I remember coming across a Cannibal Corpse album cover, and I want to say it was Butchered at Birth, and I was so offended. I was like, oh my god, what is this? And I just didn't want to listen to it. But as my music taste was evolving, I couldn't stop myself from wanting to hear the heavier and heavier stuff. So I began to want to listen to death metal. I started giving it a real shot. Nile, Origin, Cannibal Corpse, all of the bands, Decapitated, started getting really, really into them at the tail end of high school. So my obsession with punk was still very much alive. But by the time I was a senior in high school and I was coming out of that, I wanted to listen to more different metal. On top of listening to Cradle of Filth, we ended up getting a demo with Cruelty and the Beast that came with a bunch of European bands. And one of those bands was Nightwish. Nightwish was a really kind of, obviously, they're a straight like classical metal band. And they're more dorky, if you will, but I loved it. I would listen to it. I remember listening to it at the apartment while I'm cleaning. My father comes home and he's like, what the hell are you listening to? Is this church music? It definitely wasn't, but it sounded like it. But Tarja's classically trained voice on top of the heavy riffs, I couldn't get enough of it. So by the time I'm leaving high school, senior year, and then leaving, I was now fully thrust into becoming a metalhead. And I started getting away from the punk music. But then I started going to metal shows, and that, again, it was just a switch for me. It was a natural evolution of my musical taste. And metal shows, man, those circle pits can get pretty crazy. If you've never been in one, I mean, they're just crazier. I mean, punk rock shows, yeah, they're crazy too, but metalheads, like, they just throw down. And then obviously there was the hardcore music that was everybody I knew that was into it in high school. I went to some hardcore shows. I liked some hardcore bands, like Bleeding Through was a big one, but I felt they were a little bit more metal than they were hardcore, but I loved Bleeding Through. And then there was Zayo and Evergreen Terrace. Those were cool bands, and I went and saw all of them at Showcase, but I never really liked the Hong Kong Fooey dance. I thought that shit was stupid. Even to this day, like, when they say crowd killing, I think that's so dumb. I don't like it. Sorry, hardcore fans. Sorry, people that do the Hong Kong Fooey dancing. But I just think it's silly. And I don't like it, because even though you're not intentionally trying to hurt people, I feel like it's violent in a way that you're hurting people. And so I'm not about that. Circle pits are one thing, but when you're like spin kicking and crowd killing and then doing the head running thing where you run on the crowd, and dude, you could hurt someone's neck that way. Whatever. I just don't like it. Anyway, so the end of high school, the year after it, I'm now fully love metal. So at this point, I'm just going to metal shows with my buddy Rob, and then my buddy Enrique, we started going to metal shows too. And by the time we're 21-ish, early 20s, where that's what we're doing, we're going to metal shows constantly. Everything you could think of. The Rockstar Energy Mayhem tour was a big tour for us that we would go to. I didn't really get to go to Ozfest, which kind of sucked because those lineups back in the day were amazing. But I did catch when Knotfest started. I was going to those all the time. Knotfest, Ozfest, I did that a lot too. And I couldn't get enough of those metal festivals. They were really fun. And again, I was still getting in the pit. I remember, I want to say it was a Rockstar Energy Mayhem tour, and Cannibal Corpse was headlining the side stage. And me and Rob are right there, and they open up with the Evisceration Plague, and it was the slowest song they've ever recorded ever, but the crowd goes crazy. And so if you've ever been to Glen Helen, which is in the San Bernardino area of California, the side stage was just covered in, it's just a dirt field essentially. So anytime the mosh pit was going off, you would just get mounds and mounds of dirt just flying in the air. Like, I would either take my shirt off and use it as a bandana, or remember to take a bandana, because you're just coughing up black dirt after you're in that mosh pit. But me and Rob are there. Evisceration Plague starts. It's the first song, mind you, of their full set. They start playing it. We lose each other. There was shitty cell phone service in that area. I lost Rob for like 4 hours. So again, metal. I went from hip hop to punk to metal. That's my evolution of music. And between the ages of 20 to 30, I love, you know, that's me. I'm going to metal shows. I can't get enough of it. I started experiencing my first metal festivals, and I'm just fully obsessed. Again, show going has been the constant in my life since an early age, and it's something that I will never give up, and it makes me feel centered. Letting all my inhibitions out the window and seeing a live band live is just, it's the greatest high for me. But now that I'm in my 30s, towards the latter half of my 20s, leading into my 30s, I stopped getting in the mosh pit. And the reasoning behind that is, when you're young, like I said before earlier in the episode, you can pop right up after getting injured. Obviously, if you break a limb, that's different. But if you fall hard or anything happens to you, you pop right up, you heal, and in a week, you're good to go. Like, it doesn't matter. But when you're in your late 20s and your early 30s, if you fall, if you take a nasty spill, guess what? You're not popping back up. You're hurt for weeks on end. And I've gotten to the age where I don't really want to do that anymore. You know, I would much rather stand in the back next to the bar where I can get a beer and comfortably watch a band that I like. It's not that back in the day I wasn't watching the bands, but it's a very chaotic scene when you're in the mosh pit and you're throwing your arm up, you're belting out lyrics, you're bouncing into people. So you're not exactly watching the band fully, which, I mean, you hear them and you're just, that's what you get in the spirit and you let it all loose. things. So now in my later years, in my 30s, which I'm in now, I like to just hang out. Not getting pushed, not getting stepped on, not getting jammed against a fence if there's a security fence there, is a lot of fun for me now. So that's why now I'm the retired mosher. I will say there are times when I do get, as they say, a wild hair up my ass and I need to get in the mosh pit, but I instantly regret it. Let me give you a little bit of a story. This happened, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4. As I mentioned earlier in the episode, I'm a big Narcoleptic Youth fan. They're kind of like my hometown heroes, if you will. So they were playing at the Doll Hut in Anaheim, California. Me and my buddy Leo went to go see them. I don't think at that point he had seen them yet. And I was like, dude, you got to listen to this band. He started getting really into punk music. And I was like, yeah, dude, you got to check out Narcoleptic Youth. So anyway, we go to see them. This is like my 30th, 40th time. I don't even know at this point. And I think it's his first or it's his first few. Anyway, we're at the Doll Hut. And the Doll Hut, if you've never been, is a tiny house that they renovated into a venue. The stage itself in the center of the main room is probably 2 feet high, maybe 2.5. It's small. So if you've ever been at the Doll Hut, if you've ever been against that stage, it comes up to your shins, basically. At my height, it comes up to my shins. So Narcoleptic Youth goes to get on, and I'm like, I gotta get in this pit. I'm in my 30s already, and funny enough, Leo's in the back. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm not gonna do that. And I'm like, yeah, I understand. Because again, Leo's around my age. I think he's a year younger, and he knows, like, you're getting tossed around. It hurts. So I'm in the mosh pit. I'm going crazy. And then I'm up against the stage. And I'm just screaming into Joey Bondage, the lead singer's face. Belting out lyrics. Having a good time. There's just something about Narcoleptic Youth. It could just be the nostalgia of it. And just the fact that they're just a fun band to watch live. But anytime I see them live, I always have to get in the mosh pit. Even though I know it's going to hurt. So I'm getting shoved against this 2.5 foot stage. And my shins are just getting ravaged, absolutely ravaged, but I don't care. I'm a few tall cans deep. I'm having a good time. I'm belting out the lyrics, and lo and behold, for a few weeks after that, I got gnarly bruises and my shins are just wrecked. So that's what I'm kind of talking about. That's why I'm known as a retired mosher now. Those kind of things, they don't really happen that often anymore. I mean, it's funny because I used to make fun of the guys that would be standing like on the outside of the pit with their arms folded or they're by the bar. And I'm like, look at these losers. They don't know what it's about. But they did know what it's about. They'd lived that life already and they were older and they understood. At this point, they just want to hang out and they just want to watch the band. Now, that is me. That is why I'm the retired mosher. That is why this podcast is called that. And I just wanted to give everybody, all my listeners, a kind of background on that, why I decided to call this podcast that, and a little bit about my journey through music and why I'm, you know, in my description for the podcast, it's an aging metalhead and his adventures in life. This is just a slam cut version of me from the age of 2 years old all the way up to 36. Yep, that's how old I am now. Obviously, I'm going to be sharing a lot more personal details as this podcast goes on, but I just wanted to give everybody kind of the general overview of my life in show going and getting in the mosh pit and how I transformed from a hip-hop head to a punk rocker, to a metalhead. I'm still all of those things, by the way. I love underground hip-hop. I love hip-hop. We just recently went and saw Wu-Tang twice, which was awesome. So it's not that I've abandoned any of that music. It's just that, like, that's a natural evolution of how I became who I became and why my podcast is now called the Retired Mosher Podcast. So what I wanted to say also in my teaser and also in the first episode is that this podcast is just going to be kind of a free-flowing discussion forum for myself to share with the world about my life. You know, I'm 36 years old, and I feel at this point that I've lived kind of a cool life. And I want to share it with the world. Now, I know that sounds very self-serving. And I also know that I'm maybe coming off as a little pretentious. Like, I feel like people need to hear what I have to say. That's not it at all. who knows? Maybe I'm just experiencing an early midlife crisis and I had to start a podcast because that's what everybody does these days, I guess, right? Either way, the Retired Mosher podcast is going to be a place where I'm going to talk about my experiences and my feelings and how I view the world, my perspective, because I really think it's important for everybody to do that. I feel like that's how we experience empathy with one another, how we connect to one another, is sharing our experiences and sharing our outlooks on life, because we come from all different walks of life and we should never punish somebody for thinking a certain way or what have you. I'm going to be bringing on people that have very differing opinions on life. In fact, I have a plan of bringing on a guest who's a full-on emo fan, and emo music is not something that I like a lot. There are a few bands that I do like, but overall, I think the genre is corny as hell, and I just don't like it. But I'm going to be bringing somebody on that's going to talk with me about that. I want this podcast to also be a place of differing opinions so that everybody can just kind of see what it's like to have civil discourse again. I feel like that's something that's missing in this country, is civil discourse. Just because somebody has a different opinion or a different outlook doesn't mean that we have to argue and put them down or try to interject our own experience, our own ideologies on them, or our own belief system, or what have you. So I will be bringing guests on this podcast very soon. So be on the lookout for that. And that's all I have for you guys this week. Thank you so much for listening to my very first episode. And also, if you join me again, thank you so much for listening to this episode. For all the people that continue to support me, I truly, truly appreciate you. All of my friends, all of my family, anybody that listened to that first episode, thank you so much. Anybody that liked my Instagram page, thank you so much. If you heard about me through a friend or a family member sharing it, welcome. Thank you so much for supporting me. I hope that you continue to support me in this journey on this podcast. If you can do me a huge favor, please go on Spotify, please go on Apple Podcasts and give me a 5-star rating. That is how people are going to be able to see my podcast more, and it's going to allow me to get more exposure and hopefully get to a point where I'm able to bring on bands as well. That's my ultimate goal. I'm going to bring on guests. I'm going to bring on friends that are in bands, but I also want to interview bands. So if you're listening to this and you have a band, you're a local band, you're an up-and-coming band, what have you, I would love to interview you on this podcast. So please reach out to me on Instagram and I would love to interview you. As you've heard, I am a music fanatic and I want to support music the best way that I can with stories, your stories, how you became a band, all that good stuff. So please, if you're in a band or you know local bands and you think that they would want to be on this podcast, please tell them to reach out to me, or you reach out to me. You can contact me on my Instagram page at Retired Mosher Pod. Retired Mosher Pod on Instagram. Send me a DM and let's set this up. I would love to have you on this podcast so we can talk about your journey as well. Thank you guys so, so much for supporting me and listening to this podcast. That is it for me. Also, if you want to follow all the other things that I do, I am actually part of quite a few other podcasts. So if you like what you hear here, you can also go follow me everywhere else. So please go like and subscribe to my friends at the Horrible People's Network. They are some of my best friends and they throw on some really great shows. There's Plot Armor Plus, which is ran by Ruben. Ruben is playing himself, who's been abducted by aliens and forced, or maybe not forced, but he has to watch obscure anime and kind of give his opinions and a recap on that. Please go listen to that. There's also Hops and Oats, which is ran by Danny. Hops and Oats is all about beer and all about music. I am going to be on that very soon, I promise. Me and Danny have been talking about it. We're going to try to work it out. But please go follow that one as well. Also, if you're a gamer like me, I am also a gamer, you can follow me and my buddies on the Horrible People's Network at the NPC Gaming Pod. That's npc.gaming.pod. We talk about gaming news, we predict things that keep happening, and we just have a good time talking shit on Microsoft and doing what we can for the gaming community. So please go follow us on that. It is me, Anthony Fuentes, and Alex Cordova. We are the co-hosts, and we are on every single episode. So please go give that a follow. Also, please go give Turning Tables Pod a listen as well. If you're a fan of D&D, yes, everybody, I'm a giant nerd. I love gaming. I play D&D, but I also love sports, and I'm very extroverted. I'm an anomaly. I understand that. So Anyway, please go give Turning Tables Pod a listen and go follow them on Instagram on the Horrible People's Network. It is a live D&D campaign. I play the role of Siegfried, who is a pirate lord barbarian. It's so much fun. We have very, very good role players in this campaign. So if you like D&D or you're not sure about D&D, but you want to kind of get the gist of it, go listen to the podcast. And also finally, the flagship podcast of the Horrible People's Network is the Horrible People's Podcast. I have been on that podcast quite a few times. And if you go listen right now, I am cultivating an entire month of episodes, which I did last year, and it ended up being their biggest month. So they brought me back again to do it this year. It's called Trash Month. And the reason why we call it Trash Month is because the Horrible People's Podcast is all about horror movies. They give you in-depth analysis, history and analysis of horror movies. That's a lot of fun. Go listen to it, especially if you like horror movies. And if you like horrific, and I mean horrific in the sense that they suck, horror movies, please go listen to Trash Month. All the episodes were in February last year, which you can find on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. And this February, right now, we already recorded our first. It's going to be coming out next week. 4 weeks, again, of terrible horror movies that I'm forcing the entire podcast to listen to. It's so much fun. Please go support them. Go give them a listen. They are all my good friends. The Horrible People's Network, the Horrible People's Podcast, which you can find on Instagram at HORROBLE People's Podcast. Please go support them because they support me and they're great people. Thank you guys again very much. This is the Retired Mosher. Stay metal. Thank you guys for the support. I'll catch you next week.